Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of power, mind power. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Mind power that is going to enable you as an individual to perhaps see yourself in a whole different light. And for all of the doomsday predictions, be able to turn your life around, recognizing opportunity when it knocks on your door. My guest today is Michael Neal. He is an internationally renowned transformative success coach. His book is titled Super Coach, and there are 10 secrets to transform anyone's life. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You have been a success coach, my goodness, for well over 20 years, and you've dealt with people from all walks of life. You also have done a lot of seminars and training programs for people. You have been at the United Nations, been around the world speaking to others. You currently host a weekly talk show on Hay House Radio as well.
And we were doing the numbers yesterday, and we were trying to figure out. We think that I've certainly spoken to over 100,000 people now, so we're working. We're getting there.
That is absolutely incredible. That's absolutely marvelous. Well, I know you have a passion for teaching, and I really have an empathy with that because I think anyone who is involved in counseling, you always want to leave people feeling as if they are becoming aware of themselves in a different way. But what got you interested, Michael, in becoming a coach? I mean, a super coach, you don't find a packet mix, add water, drink it, and you've got it.
There was a show when I was a kid called The Greatest American Hero where that's pretty much how it happened. They just left him the suit with an instruction manual. But it didn't happen that way for me. I really got into it purely because I was a deeply depressed, suicidal teen. And I was looking for things that would help me get through. And that wouldn't wind up being more destructive than what I was going through in the first place. And I was fortunate enough to come across some of those things. And I really began teaching and coaching by accident, just sharing things that I'd learned with friends. And it dawned on me one day, do you know what? This is the most fun that I have of anything that I do. And that's when I began to do it professionally and not just for fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, throughout your book, you have a number of little fables that you use to illustrate, and I believe in the power of story like you do. I think it's very, very significant. But I want to ask you a question, because you went through these troubled teens, and there's a lot of people out there that say, oh, we are just seeming to have so much more of this with teenagers today. And there is this cycle sometimes that people go through that they are challenged. When you were going through this, who was the most inspirational person to you that touched your heart, your mind, and your spirit the most?
Do you know, when I was going through what I was going through, honestly, as I think back on it, there wasn't one person that stood out. It was the moments of kindness. There were just moments of kindness that I can look back at somebody just being unreasonably kind to me. And when I say that, when I wasn't being rational, when I wasn't being nice, when I was probably being a bit of a jerk. And when I look back, you know, I almost want to go up to everyone I interacted with and first off apologize for being just inept, because I was. I was in so much misery that I wasn't able to communicate in the way that I would like to have communicated, but also just to give the biggest thank you to those sort of unsung heroes, most of whose names I don't know. Mm-hmm. Who just the people who were patient with me, who were just took a little bit of extra time, and you know, I'm thinking of the couple of people I do know, along with my parents, were the professors that I had at university, who, when the university tried to throw me out because I was a liability They all stood for me. They all stood up for me and said, no, he's a good kid. He's a little messed up right now, but we want him to stay. And it's things like that that, looking back, are the ones that really are meaningful.
Now, in your process of being inspired, having kindness, being able to look at things, when you were in college, were you then oriented towards getting a counseling degree? Did you say to yourself at that time, gee, this is what I want to do when I grow up?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I hated the therapist at the school. And in retrospect, you know, they were hamstrung by the laws of the state. I was in Texas at the time, where the school had mandated that I had to be in therapy 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
But the state mandated that if I spoke about feeling or thinking suicidal thoughts while in therapy, I'd have to be kicked out of school. So I had to go to therapy, but I wasn't allowed to talk about anything.
That
for
is
me,
amazing.
In a way, that did launch my career, because I just thought, well, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was determined that I was just going to find a way that did work for me. And, I, you know, of all the things in Supercoach, in the book, the thing that I get the most teenagers and parents of teenagers write into me and come up to me at live events and thank me for is a little section in the book called Have an Average Day. And the whole idea of having an average day, which is something that one of my coaches once said to me, they said, you know, mm-hmm. they'd go, well, have an average day. And I was thinking, what are you talking about? I mean, I'm supposed to have a great day, aren't I? I'm supposed to have an extraordinary day. And he told me about this research that had been done into something called the linguistics of suicide. And what they did is they analyzed over 3,000 suicide notes to see if there were some patterns there that they could use for prevention. And what they found was this thing that they called the curse of exceptionality, that so many teens find themselves bombarded with messages that they're supposed to be exceptional, that they're supposed to somehow be better at something, more fantastic, more wonderful, more amazing, smarter, complete more courses, do more things. And by nature, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000 of us can be exceptional. So not only are you setting up a game where 99% of the people are going to lose by the setup of the game, but those few people who are somewhat exceptional at something, that have an exceptional gift, wind up feeling cut off from everyone else. And so what they found that made a real difference, and it's something that there's been teaching since the 1930s, a guy named Dr. Abraham Lowe, is that the average person having an average day is considerably happier than your person who's striving for exceptionality, but also tends to wind up achieving more over time. It's sort of like the tortoise and the hare.
Mm-hmm.
That the cumulative effect of a series of average days is really quite phenomenal. Whereas what happens when you're always striving to be exceptional is you get this incredibly high burnout rate. And at its absolute worst, and this is not the rule, but this is the exception, at its absolute worst, it can lead to things like teen suicide. And that, for me, if there was one bit of the book that I send it out to people on request, and I tell people, just photocopy that bit, give it to your kids. You know, I've got 3 kids, and, you know, we tell them, hey, kids, get straight C's, okay? We love you.
I think that is so prevalent, and there is such an attitude many times that if you're not performing, quote unquote, like a circus monkey, and I'm not putting the monkeys down, I'm just saying this is.
I know you're going to get angry emails from monkeys. Right?
Yes, and the thing is that it's just, it's amazing, and we don't make it okay. And I think anyone who is an overachiever, and many of these students and adults that take this dispositioning frequently are overachievers, and they feel like they're failing somehow. And lots of times it's pressure put on by society, school. It doesn't mean that overachieving or desiring to, you know, go the extra mile is bad, but I think it is okay to have your C days, your average days, and just say it's all right to shut down for a while. It's okay to chill out and just give yourself some room to breathe. But we live in a very interesting time, and I think that, especially with technology, there's this sense of urgency, and they're always like instantaneous attitudes. A friend of mine called it the McDonald's mentality, the 60-second McDonald's mentality, and she said it took her a long time. She was in her 40s before she realized that didn't work in life very well. She said she had to grow up into that. You have something that you say in your book about taking responsibility for creating one's experience from the inside out. And when you do that, one can reclaim their position as the creator of their life. And I really like that because I think that people need to know that they can be creators. And it's pretty hard to get that across. Give us an illustration of a story you like to utilize to get that point across to people.
Well, what's interesting is we are creators. The question is, do we create the experience of ourselves as victims, or do we create the experience of ourselves as we really are? And you know, there's just so many stories of you know, people who've had that experience for themselves. But you know, one of the ones that I just think is so illustrative of that kind of thing is, I had a client who was absolutely convinced that he wasn't good enough, and he was actually quite a high achiever. He was in the movie business, and he's been in movies. You know, some people would recognize him, but it didn't matter how much he did; it was never enough. And he said to me, he said, "Well, the thing is, I'm lazy, and I've been trying to overcome it my whole life." And I looked at his life, and I thought, this is incredible, because this guy is probably one of the hardest working people I know. He does job after job after job. He travels around the world doing work. He's taking classes when he isn't doing that. And he's done that since long before I even knew him. And yet he was absolutely convinced that he was lazy, and so much so that a lot of what he did wasn't to get better. It was to kind of try and overcome this imaginary laziness. And once he began to see that he was the one who made up what lazy meant, that he defined lazy in this place that was so far beyond what most people would have thought was insane achievement,
mm-hmm.
that no matter what he did, even if it was five times more than you or I would do, he still got to experience himself as lazy and then try to compensate for it. Once he saw that he was the one doing that, we didn't have to do therapy. We didn't have to go in and do lots of affirmations about, I'm not lazy, I'm productive, or anything like that. Once he saw that he was the one creating it, instantly he was able to create it in a more useful way. And that, for me, is the way that I've written this book. The reason I've written this book is because this is an insight-based approach to change, to transformation, because once you see things different, you automatically do them differently. So there's no willpower. It's not about, right, just go out and try really hard, kids. Once you see it, you do it. And that's to give people that opportunity to see things in a new way and in a more useful way. Is the most powerful gift I know how to give.
I love the quote you have in your book. It's the fact that millions of people share the same forms of mental pathology does not make these people sane. That I just laughed. I
yeah.
laughed at that one. I thought that was so cute. I said, that's true. But what, you know, really when you look
everyone
at
everyone else
it,
is overachieving.
I just thought that that was such a good quote. Now, you have a quote in here, too, by George Bernard Shaw, and it's a fascinating one that you chose, because it's right at the front of your chapter, The Problem with Goals. And the quote reads as this way, I dread success. To have succeeded is to have finished one's business on earth, like the male spider who is killed by the female the moment he has succeeded in courtship. I like a state of continual becoming with a goal in front and not behind. I really like that quote, because that is a different paradigm of perspective. And I think George Bernard Shaw had it there. You have so many people that will come to a certain point in their life and they'll say, well, I've done this, and they haven't planned anything else. And consequently, they go blah.
Well, and usually the reason for that is that the way they went about achieving whatever they'd achieved was so exhausting, involved so much suffering and sacrifice, that who would want to get back into that game if you didn't have to?
Mm-hmm.
The metaphor I use in the book, and I use my dogs as an example because I've got these two dogs, and one of them just loves to play fetch. And you can throw the bone forever, and out she goes, and she'll go get it, and she'll do it till she dies if we let her. And the other dog, great dog, she's a beautiful dog, she's a golden retriever, she won't fetch anything. She's just happy, happy, happy. We'll play all day, but just she won't play fetch. And I see that in my clients. They're the compulsive goal setters, the compulsive overachievers. And what they do is they put their sense of self, their sense of self-worth, their sense of self-esteem, their happiness onto the bone and the goal. And they throw it out and they go, right, I got to achieve this much money and this much success in the next 3 years. And they'll go after it, and they'll go after it, and they'll go after it. And if they get it, which a lot of the times, especially early on, they do because they're really keen, they get that amazing rush of self-esteem and look how great I am. And then they throw the bone again. And each time they throw it, they get more and more tired, but they can't stop themselves because they think the only way for them to feel good about themselves is to achieve even more. And that's the fundamental, I would go so far as to say it's the fundamental problem with our society, is that we have a society that's set up that says we'll be happy when we get what we want. We're allowed happiness only when we achieve. And you only have to spend a couple of weeks reading People Magazine or OK Magazine or any of those magazines to see it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
That the same people who were there at the top 1 week, a few weeks later, a few months later, it's all come crashing down around them. It's not their fault. It's that the system doesn't work that way. You were born happy. I have a new godson, and we were in the hospital a little while back. It's actually another one. I write about one of my godsons in the book, but this is a new one, and a little boy named Ryder. And I went into the hospital, and I told him about the economy, and I told him that, quite honestly, I was a little disappointed because he, you know, I mean, honestly, the kid's incompetent. He couldn't even change his own diaper. I mean, he's 6 weeks old, in fairness. But at some point, we stop making that okay. We stop making our being alive the miracle. And we start thinking we've got to do something in order to be miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
It takes us away from our fundamental innate well-being. And one of the biggest shifts that people get from Supercoach, and it's the thing, again, it's why I wrote the book, is because when you see this, everything changes. That when you see that there's nothing that you need to do or be or have or change in order to be complete and whole and at peace, it's not that you don't do anything. It's that you stop doing things in order to. You stop doing things in order to be happy. You do them because you want to do them or because you see there's a need for them to be done. And when you're no longer being dragged around by the nose in pursuit of what you already have, life gets a lot easier and a lot more fun.
You bring up some points in this chapter about goals that you encourage people to make a list of all the goals they carry around that were handed to them by somebody else. And that is a mind stopper. I don't think often that people will stop and reflect on the fact that maybe dad or mom or a teacher or, you know, a minister, a rabbi, someone along the line, could be a spouse, could be a kid, it could be anything, that they've bought into that they should be doing certain things. But these are goals that other people have set for them. It's not really what's in their heart. It's not really what they want. Give some
and it's done in complete innocence. In absolute fairness to the generation that precedes us, we are all doing, based on what we see, we're doing the best we can to share our knowledge, share our wisdom, share what we think will make the next generation happy with our kids. The problem is, we don't actually know. Because we've been trying to figure it out, and we might even find something that works for us. But the analogy I always use is, if you go into a shoe shop, right, and you see some shoes, and the salesman goes, oh, these shoes, they're beautiful. And you try them on, and they don't fit you. Now, they may well be beautiful, but are you going to blame your foot for the shoes not fitting?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's what we do with goals. We blame ourselves for not wanting what we're supposed to want, for not being inspired by what we're told we're supposed to be inspired by. You are the expert on you. There is nobody outside you who can tell you what inspires you, what makes you come alive. And when you claim that, when you kind of go, well, do you know what? That just makes sense to me. Then suddenly you can begin navigating by that passion and by that aliveness that comes with that. And that navigation, navigating by that sort of desire, that creates the most magical life that anyone could ever wish for. That's when the things start unfolding as if by design. I sometimes say that the difference between trying to do it the right way, the way we're taught, that trying to get happiness and achieve our goals the right way is like walking barefoot down a dry riverbed filled with rocks with a canoe on our head. You might get there, but it's going to be hard, and you're going to be really worn out when you get there. Following that inner guidance, following that inner wisdom, that inner passion, that's like waiting for the river to fill, putting the canoe down, getting in, and yeah, you might need to paddle a bit, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. You have a section in your book called The Wisdom of Common Sense, and you said, this kind of common sense, innate wisdom approach to life is nearly always available to us, but we spend so much of our time caught up in the whirlwind of our thoughts that we don't notice it. And even when we do notice it, we'll often ignore it, hoping that our intellect can find a different answer more in keeping with what we hope will turn out to be true. That, I think, just about every living human being has experienced. When we go through that kind of a thought process, what is a tip to get out of it? Because so often we have a fantasy in front of us in our mind. Relationships are a good way. It's like, gee whiz, I meet up with someone, this person has asked me to marry them, and you give an example like this in your book, and you go, nah, this isn't really right, but you're walking down the aisle. Why do we do things like this?
We've been taught to trust the abacus over the computer. We've been taught to trust the very limited functioning of our conscious mind, which can handle between 5 and 9 bits of information at a time and only has access to our memory, to our historical database, instead of the huge biocomputer of our unconscious mind, of our connection to whatever it is, that source of wisdom that lets us have insights into things that we shouldn't logically know, and yet we somehow know. This is the person for me. This is the job for me. This is the direction for me. This is not where I want to go. Everyone has experiences of tapping into that larger database, whatever it is. And yet we've been told, no, the real value is in logic. The real value is in working it out. Well, that really is like taking an abacus and you move one bead over to the right and, well, yes, I can see how that would be good, but then you move a bead over to the left because that might not be good, and then you move another bead over to the right. If you relax into a more reflective, quieter mind, instantly it's like going online with your computer. And instead of only having access to what's on your hard drive, you have access to the whole internet. And it really is as simple as seeing that the second your mind quiets, you access the bigger picture.
Very true.
And your mind can go quieter in a moment. That's the great, for me, the thing that gives me so much hope in those moments where I get caught up and I start feeling like, oh my gosh, I got to sort this out, I got to do this, is I absolutely know that no matter how messed up I'm feeling, I'm one thought away from peace. I'm one thought away from quiet. Because the second that I remember, the second that I see again, oh, it's the quiet mind that all good things come through, I go right back to it. And again, there's nothing you have to practice. Once you see it, it's yours.
You talk about thought spotting, and I like that quite a bit. And you say, you've got to spot the thought behind the feeling. Talk to us about that for a moment.
Well, you know, we one of the reasons that so many of us feel like victims is that we've been taught that our feelings are responses to circumstance. That I feel bad because of what he said. I feel helpless because of what happened. I feel scared because of what's going on over there. And the truth is, we feel scared or helpless or positive because of our thoughts about what's happening. And, you know, the simplest way to see it, I remember when my brother went off to college, and I remember my mother was devastated. And my sister didn't really care, and I was thrilled. Now, if it's what happened that had mattered, well, then our feelings would have all been the same. She felt the way she felt because her baby was all grown up. And she thought, oh, I'll never have him back in the same way again. My sister felt what she felt because she didn't really have an opinion about it. Mm-hmm. I felt what I felt because I was thinking, finally, I get the big room. It was the thought that led to the feeling, not the circumstance. When you can begin to spot the thought that's creating whatever it is that you're feeling, you stop being a victim of circumstance. It puts just enough space between you and circumstance that you begin to have choice. And when you're back at a place of choice where you say, yeah, I could go down this rabbit hole, but I don't have to. I could also see this in another way. Life gets a lot less scary because you realize the worst thing that can happen to you is a thought. Usually a thought about whatever you think the worst thing that could happen to you is.
Well, we have just a couple more minutes, and I would love for you to address time management here, because this is something that I think is so very important. I don't know of anyone that doesn't say, I wish I had more hours in the day. And time management, setting priorities, all of that is so important. What are some of the tips you recommend for that?
Well, I teach time management in three words, because I think that time management shouldn't take that much of your time. And there are three elements that any effective time management system has. And the first is clarity. It's much easier to manage your priorities, which is what time management really is what am I going to focus on? What am I going to make important? When you're clear about what it is that you're really up to in the world, what it is that you really want to create, and how much time you actually have. So that's the clarity part. The second is structure. Having some kind of structure that makes it easier for you to get things done. And that might be a habit, that might be a system, that might be a reminder. People rarely need to schedule take out the trash because they just know that that's what they do. They don't have to schedule brush teeth because there's a system for that. That's just a habit that's already in there. When you've got clarity, when you create structure, the only thing left that you need is boldness. The boldness to actually follow through on your priorities and to actually do what it is you said is important. Because I say this again and again to people, and this is at the heart of the time management section of Supercoach. The most important choice you make is what you choose to make important. And when you're really clear on what that is, you have a structure in place to support you in following through on it, and you have the boldness to say yes to it and say no to the things that might interfere with it, you won't have a time management problem ever again.
Well, as you can tell, Michael Neal loves what he does, and his book, Super Coach, 10 Secrets to Transform Anyone's Life, well, they give a lot of assistance to you. He's got some wonderful exercises through his book. He's got fabulous little fables that are scattered through it. And I think that you'll find if you wanted to have something to work with, that you could maybe take half hour out of the day. Maybe if you ride the bus or you're going to be waiting for your kids at the ball game and you want to feed your mind, then I think you would enjoy Supercoach quite a bit. Michael, what is your website?
You can find me at geniuscatalyst.com, and we do free weekly and monthly tips, and we do audio, and just it's my playground on the web, my sandbox.
It's his sandbox on the web. I like that. Geniuscatalyst.com, Michael Neal, the book, Supercoach, 10 Secrets to Transform Anyone's Life. Remember, it's up to you. You're the one that can initiate the action. And give yourself some time. It'll make a big difference. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you, Michael, for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, and if you would like to chat with me today, here is the worldwide toll-free number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So just give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I had someone make an inquiry about the newsletter. Yes, it is up and online. If you want to go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, of course, all my newsletters are archived there. If you would like to go back and read any, you're welcome to do that. They're all there for your reading pleasure. And in the newsletter that I put out every month, there's always a listing of my guests as well as on BBS. So you can find out who's coming up by checking the listings of guests that are evolving, and of course I try to keep you appraised every week with those that are going to be coming up, but you can get that advance notice if you so desire. Also, don't forget, if you have a paranormal story, whether it's about an experience with an animal, ghosts, out of body, near death experience, I'd love to hear your story. I'm compiling a grouping of stories. I'm aiming for 100, giving myself a year to do this, and we're going to be submitting it then to a publisher. But what I want to do with this book of the paranormal stories is show people that they don't need to be afraid of experiences, that these are things that happen to a lot of individuals. You know, when you go through a psychic experience or you've had something that has very, very unique and unusual, sometimes it can be quite scary. I know it was for me. And mine started out with dreams. So you can have these experiences until you can talk with someone or read something. And in our world today, there's so much more open communication, and I think that's fabulous. So I just want you to be aware of that. And I'd love to have your story. Send it to me, Donna, at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at Delphi, D-E-L-P-H-I, International.com. And I also will need your contact information so that when we're ready to do it, then you will be notified and you can be made aware of what is going on. So I'm putting everything into a file right now and grouping it all together, so I'd love to hear from you. Telephone number to call in, too, if you'd like to chat with me, 888-815-9756. Well, Mother's Day is coming up, and I came across this cute story. I just have to share it with you. And I know those of you ladies that have new family members, bambinos, that you will relate to this. And every mom in the world, I think, would relate to it. And it's about a young couple. Their names are Kathy and Jim. Oh, they could hardly wait for their baby to be born. When the baby was born, they could hardly wait until the baby would sleep through the night. If ever you've gone through that, you know that that's an automatic. That's the first thing that you want more than anything else. Now, originally, the plan was to take turns getting up when their baby started to fuss. Well, we've got a caller, so I'm going to finish the rest of this true story in a little bit. But we'll take our caller first. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, where are you calling from?
Roger, Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi, Roger. Oh, Hartford, it's been a long time since I've been there, but what a gorgeous, gorgeous area. I loved it. I was there in the fall when I went. And
we're having some gorgeous weather right now.
Wow. Well, I think in spring it must be just as beautiful as the fall season of the year, because in the fall it's as if the universe just takes a rainbow of colors and just has a great time doing a paint job. It's absolutely amazing, the colors that you have there. I just love it.
Yes.
Okay, Roger, let's get down to business with you. First of all, I want you to take some time and take some long walks. And the reason I'm saying this is not to be flippant. You have a creative side with yourself that when you are on a walk and you're not trying to force anything to work out in your head, but maybe you put a thought or a question in your head. Perhaps you're out, let's say, looking for a job, and you're saying, well, I need to think about things a little bit differently. What should I do? So you go out for a walk, and you're just doing something, a no-brainer, and all of a sudden it's like, pa-boom, there it is. There's a concept, an idea, and you need to always carry a pad of paper, a little notebook of some kind with you, no matter where you go, and a pen, so that you can stop and write down immediately the idea. Don't judge it. Just write it down. Then continue walking. And then you may be standing in line at a grocery store, and you're getting yourself something to eat, and you're just saying, okay, I'll stand. Just no-brainer. Bingo. Somebody comes up with something. Or you look at a magazine. You see a title, and it goes, ta-dang, click, click. And you are very interesting to me because you have a patterning of putting yourself under such stress. You try to intellectualize and have everything go through what I would describe as the left brain process, and then you get irritated with yourself when it doesn't work out. Well, it's because you're cutting off your creative side. You need to be able to just allow things to flow so that those concepts can pop into the head freely, because you're highly intuitive. Your psychic ability is quite good. And you need to know that it is a wonderful partner to go right along with the logical side of yourself. And when you can relax, I mean, maybe you would want a garden. I don't know what your preference would be. It could be maybe going to the gym and doing 500 push-ups. I mean, it's getting into what I call the no-brain zone, where you allow yourself to tap into unlimited possibilities and concepts. And I really think it can make all the difference in the world to you as an individual. And it will take a lot of stress off of you. And also, it will help you to detach from some of the emotional chains that I see you feeling like you lock yourself up with. And a lot of it's just reformulating habit patterns so that they work differently for you. But I think you're intelligent. I think you are well-spoken. I think you are thoughtful. I believe you're an individual that has a lot of drive, but you're feeling stuck. So a good way to get unstuck is to go into the no-brain zone. And it really sounds wacky, but it does work. You're just trying too hard. What question would you like to ask me today?
I will take those suggestions.
I'm sorry, we've got a little bit of a time delay, and I didn't mean to talk over you. What did you say?
Okay, I thank you very much. I will take those suggestions. They sound right on as far as, you know, receiving messages here and there when you're out and things like that. That is how they come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, you're correct in that I overthink things, and then sometimes I'm creating my own blocks. So I think you're right on.
Bless your heart. Well, I want you to stop being so hard on yourself. If nothing else, force yourself just to sit. And if you see a squirrel, say, that squirrel isn't doing things the way they're supposed to be. Don't worry about making the judgment. Turn off the left side. Doesn't mean the left side thinking is wrong. It's very useful. But you want it so it's going to become compatible with your right side.
All right.
And I really hate to say left and right side, but most people will have the concept of the right brain representing the intuitive and the left brain representing the logical. So that's typically how people think. The truth is we've got it all. But some sides, one perspective might be more strongly supported than another side. They're both good.
Right. All right, Donna, I will do my best to follow your suggestions. I'm sure you're right on.
Well, I think you're a terrific guy, and you enjoy your spring in Hartford, Connecticut, and just savor the quiet moments. Enjoy the moments when you have the lull, because when things start getting busy, you won't even have very much time to do this. So enjoy the lull. Savor it. It's like a fine glass of wine. You don't gulp it down. You sip it.
Thank you very much for all your help today.
You are welcome. You have a magnificent day now. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. Remember that couple I was talking to you about? Yes, they've got the baby. Yes, they've got all this stuff going on. And, of course, they had as a couple, because this is what you're supposed to do. You agree to take turns? Well, the husband, Jim, would say to his wife, hey, come on, honey, she's probably hungry, because the wife was nursing. And, of course, he can't do anything about it because she's the mom, right? She's the one who has to do the nursing. Now, they loved their little girl. And she was growing, as all children do. They will get bigger and bigger. And then, of course, what you want them to do is to talk, right? Well, Kathy decided that the first word out of her baby's mouth was going to be dada. That's what she wanted. And she worked very, very hard with her very bright baby girl to teach her to say what she was so sure would be a magical word to daddy's ears. Well, it finally happened. One night, all of Kathy's diligence about training this little adorable baby girl to say dada happened. And it occurred at 2:15 in the morning. The baby, whose name was Anna, by the way, she awakened and she called dada right at the top of her lungs. Guess what Kathy did? She turned over to her loving husband, Jim, and said so softly in his ear, she's calling for you, dear, and I'm sure this is something only you can handle. Sweet revenge. Yes, that's the way it is. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. This coming Sunday is Mother's Day, and there's going to be, oh my goodness, a lot of restaurants just packed to the gills with people, because that's something we like to do. We like to take our moms out. We like to make them become aware that what they've done and how they've given us things in life really make a difference. So I'm sure that so many of you have a great deal of things to do, but maybe you're wanting to do something special at home. Well, I've got a couple of recipes I can share with you this week. I'll be passing them along. But one of the things I did want to share is that a lot of people, because of the economy, are really trying to figure out how they can work with their mortgages more sensibly and do different things. So I thought that I would share with you some tips that somebody passed along to me, that if you are finding a great deal of money is going towards your mortgage, you can keep some of that money into your own pocket. Now, these are some of the tips, and they're just options that you can look at. And they say, get on fast track to a modification. You can get a lower mortgage rate and a monthly payment thanks to a loan modification. And it is something that it's going to have to be worked with over a period of time, though. So if you want to consider something like this, what you want to do is be prepared, because you're going to need to have at least a month's worth of pay stubs. If you're self-employed, you have to have all of your tax information, your last tax return, obviously, a credit report, and a hardship letter. Now, there is a warning, because there are so many frauds being put out over the internet, you've got to be very, very careful. You want to talk to your lenders, and don't think that one lender is going to be better than another. You really need to do your homework. And a lender can be a credit union, and it can be, you know, any number of banks. And you want to be very sure that you avoid any company that asks for upfront fees or a title transfer. So you want to really think this through very careful. Also, they say consolidate as many services as you can at your preferred bank. Institutions, because when times get tough, they can lose customers really, really fast. And a lot of banks are in big trouble. So they're going to really want to have as much of your business as possible. They want to expand the relationships that they have with their current customers. So it means if you get to know the manager at your bank, some of the lending institutions aren't real, real friendly that way. But if you make a point of becoming aware of the people that work there and talking to managers, letting them get to know you, they might be more willing to work with you than someone who doesn't. They might be interested in lowering interest rates, increasing your credit lines, and even maybe reducing fees. And if you have a good relationship with your bank, they may even be happy to do refinance for you because they don't want you going someplace else for business. So these are just some little things. And there's an organization you can go to, the Home Ownership Preservation Foundation. If you've got questions, if you are having some tough times, we're going through, I call it a depression. People call it a recession. It's my word. I'll just use my own application. All you need to do is call the HOPE, H-O-P-E, hotline at 888-995-HOPE. That's 888-995-HOPE. And there are people who are well-trained that can give you information on what you can do. And you also, there's different government organizations, but the Homeownership Preservation Foundation may have some suggestions that you otherwise would not have considered. This is Donna Seabolt. We're taking a break. Give me a call if you want to chat. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Seabolt. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Seabolt's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Seabolt's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Seabolt and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Seabolt publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Tomorrow we're going to have a delightful lady, Joan Anderson. She's been a guest on my show more than once. She's got a wonderful book. In fact, this would make a great gift for moms. Moms Go Where Angels Fear to Tread. And we're going to be chatting with Joan. Joan is known for her angel book. She's just a great gal. She also had a best-selling book about Loretta Young, who is an actress that was very, very famous years ago. So anyway, she's a great woman, good sense of humor, and this is just a charming, charming book. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Gloria Burgess, Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside. Very touching stories, insightful, perspectives that I know you'll enjoy. And then we've got a doozy on Friday, cryptozoology. Dina Budd. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Nope, not till Friday. You'll have to listen in to find out about cryptozoology. So give me a buzz if you want to chat today, 888-815-9756. It's gardening time. Here in the Pacific Northwest, our gardeners are just working overtime. We've had all kinds of storms. We were having winds up to 60 miles an hour in certain areas of Washington, and I know we've got all kinds of debris in our front and back yard. Big boughs came off of trees because the winds were so strong. But regardless, we're hardy souls up here because we love our gardens. And I came across a tip for those of you that love to garden that I really didn't know was going to be effective in a garden. Now, here in the Pacific Northwest, we have some snails. We have more slugs, you know, those slimy, creepy critters. We have up here banana slugs, although believe it or not, because of pesticides, they're not around so much. The slugs, in many ways, serve a very good purpose, but we don't like them when they chew up our rhododendrons and other things. Well, I found out about an ingredient that almost everybody has in their house. It's coffee. I had no idea that was good for getting rid of snails and slugs. Now, coffee is obviously considered environmentally safe, and I know many times coffee grounds, my husband is a big coffee drinker, but coffee grounds or tea grounds, tea leaves, these are things you can mix into your soil. They're biodegradable. They're just great. And it really is good to use. But according to Robert G. Hollingsworth, who's a research biologist with the government's U.S. Pacific Basin Agricultural Research Center, he's located in Hilo, Hawaii, he decided he was going to do some caffeine studies. And he worked with some other people in Hilo as well as Honolulu. And he said, we really found out in our research, because it has been touted for a long time to be very useful, getting rid of snails and slugs, but it really does work. And they found a particular pest, which was Hawaii's orchid snail. It really did the job on them. And the Hawaiian flower growers were having just a terrible time with this. So this is what he did. I'm going to give you his recipe. He applied 2% solution of caffeine in water as a spray to the coconut husk chips. Those chips that, if you've ever been around orchids, they don't put them in dirt. They're in these chips. And the chips themselves, apparently, were infested with these tiny snails. So to get rid of them, they found when they used the caffeine spray, it killed up to 95%. Of the snails. Now, they did another experiment, and there was a growth medium that was treated with 2% caffeine solution, had only 5 snails, checked 30 days after the spray was applied. That was in contrast to the 35 snails they found in that growth medium that had been treated with a standard dose of methylhide, which is a common pesticide. So, hey, what do you have to lose? You can use coffee. Now, they find that chocolate, yes, the ambrosia that we women just love, chocolate is also usable. However, if your dogs get into chocolate or if you have any pets at all that get into a chocolate mixture, it can make them sick. So you need to be aware of that. Chocolate, dogs and cats, it is very toxic to their system. Coffee isn't, though. Coffee isn't. So it's something that you can use, and it might be just what you need. But remember, you use 2% solution of caffeine in water as a spray, and you just spray it around things. Nice way to keep the bugs at bay. I think so, anyway. Okay, and I have a recipe here, but I don't know that I'm going to have enough time to give it out. I don't think so. We're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't give up your dreams. Don't forget to take time for yourself. We do live in a busy world. But you know what? It's okay to take a minute. Give yourself that grace, that opportunity. And more than anything else, enjoy the beauty around you. This is Donna. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.